from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Wednesday edition, scrutiny of the World Health Organization intensifies as the evidence points to the WHO serving as an accomplice to China's concealment of the spread of the coronavirus.
Put a hold on money spent to the WHO. We're going to put a very powerful hold on it.
That was President Trump yesterday at the Daily Coronavirus Task Force press conference talking about actions he may take. Also, a number of senators are now calling for China, that has amassed an atrocious human rights record, to be removed from a role in the UN Human Rights Council. Tennessee Senator Marsha Blackburn, who is playing a leading role in that effort, joins me in just a moment. And as churches are gearing up, they're gearing up in new ways for Resurrection Weekend. Pastor Ed Dow of Trinity Church in Temple, Texas, is here with how their church is thinking and acting outside the box, the four walls of the church, to minister to their community. But unfortunately, in some jurisdictions, we're beginning to see officials cross the line when it comes to how churches are being treated. No surprise that California officials appear to be trampling upon religious liberty. Brad Dacus, president of Pacific Justice Institute, is here with those details. And the predators are out as people, including children, find themselves with more time on their hands. Porn pushers like Pornhub are making their content more accessible, providing it free of charge. But it comes with a not-so-hidden of a price. David Brody, CBN's chief political analyst, will join me for that conversation. Also, Travis Weber, vice president of policy and government affairs here at FRC, we'll weigh in on the topic as well. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. Yesterday's White House briefing by the task force covering the coronavirus, President Trump responded to calls for the U.S. to withhold money from the World Health Organization because they aided China in withholding information from the rest of the world that it could have been helpful in preparing for the virus. Here's what he had to say.
WHO, that's the World Health Organization, receives vast amounts of money from the United States. We pay for a majority, a biggest portion of their money. And they actually criticized and disagreed with my travel ban at the time I did it. And they were wrong. They've been wrong about a lot of things. And they had a lot of information early, and they didn't want to they seem to be very China-centric.
Joining me now is Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so good to be with you, and I hope everyone is staying healthy and safe.
Well, we're keeping our distance. That's why we're doing radio. We're social distancing. I want to get into the unbelievable. It's hard to comprehend that that China would be given a role in the Human Rights Council. But before we get to that, I want to talk about WHO, because in many ways they covered for China and kept the rest of the world from having very important information that could have protected their populations from the spread of this virus. Is the president right to say we may withhold money from WHO?
Oh, the president is exactly right to say we are going to withhold this money. And I hope that he moves forward with that. Certainly, I am encouraging that he do that. And let me tell you something, Tony. I think it is time for us to reexamine the role that China is given, whether it's the WHO or the UN Security Council. Why are we allowing people who have decades of history of really brutally handling and violating the human rights? Look at what they're doing with the Uyghurs right now. Look right at what they have done. We have lost over 80,000 people to this virus. China knew for 51 days, that they had an outbreak on their hands, and they said nothing. So there is a lot of suffering. There is loss of life. There is loss of livelihood. China should pay for this. And the role that they have in these global organizations definitely should be up for a revisit.
And I would throw into this, Senator, that we rethink how we allow China to tap into the World Bank, taking out about $1.5 billion a year, which is supposed to be for underdeveloped countries. And we put in about $1.5 billion a year. And they're using this money oftentimes at cross purposes. Even in there's been some allegations that they've used this money in the repression of their religious minorities or ethnic minorities like the Uyghurs.
Well, we know that money is fungible. And when they take that from the World Bank, every company over there is a state-owned company. And we know and recognize that. And they may say they're taking it for purpose A, but they end up using it for something, some adverse purpose that has nothing to do with what they drew that money down for. So basically, they're using our dollars. And here's the other thing. You have to look at the fact that China has taken our intellectual property. They have infringed on products made in the U.S. They're famous for knockoffs. They've done this for so many years. And so why are we incentivizing this decades-old practice of knocking off cars and clothes and stealing intellectual property and books and music and so many other things that they have stolen? And then they take our jobs, and then what do? They send the world this virus.
Right. Senator Blackburn, you, along with six of your colleagues in the Senate, sent a letter to the U.N. Secretary General saying that China should not be given a position on the Human Rights Council consultative group, which plays a key role in the investigations of human rights abuses. I mean, you point obviously to the current event in which they hid this information from the world, but also they have, as you pointed out earlier, a atrocious record when it comes to human rights. Why in the world would they even be considered for such a position?
It is despicable that they would even be considered, much less that they would be seated. They have a horrific record. There is not an appreciation for life. It doesn't matter if it's the one-child policy. It doesn't matter if it's the treatment of the Uyghurs. It doesn't matter if it is how they repressed people and used people for the Communist Party's purpose, not for the individual's purpose. All of this that they are doing and the stories that are there of how people have been persecuted for their beliefs and the fact that they would even be considered is horrific. And this is one of the reasons we need to do everything we can at this point, at this stage of the game, to stop them from any further advancement. They do not need the recognition in these global organizations, and we also need to address how we deal with them on an economic basis.
So, Senator, I know the letter just went just a couple of days ago, but any acknowledgement from the UN Secretary General that he has received the letter and reviewing your concerns?
Not yet. And one would think that as soon as it hit his desk, he would have had some type of response, but he is not.
I would think so, given the fact that the United States pays such a significant portion of their budget, that they would be responsive to the United States when it comes to concerns like this. And even on its face, I mean, this is one of those things that anyone can see as problematic. You mentioned a moment ago that China should pay for what they've done. You actually are pursuing other legislation that would make China pay.
Oh, yes, indeed. I actually have three different pieces of legislation, a resolution that is a sense of the Senate that shows we know what China did, and they're not kidding us. We fully get it. The second deals with Confucius Institutes that are on many of our college campuses. And the third is the SAMC bill that returns our pharmaceutical manufacturing to U.S. shores. So those are the three legislative efforts. Another one that I'm leading is the move to have China forgive their debt. They own $1 trillion of our debt, and they should waive that debt. We know that this is going to cost a minimum of $2 trillion for us to deal with this. And then there are others of our allies that China has caused great pain and suffering. Look at what has happened in Spain and Italy and the UK and France. And, you know, to add insult to injury, France needed personal protection equipment. And what did China say? They said, oh, if you will buy Huawei, our 5G equipment, then we will sell you PPE. I mean, this, they're trying to make a buck off of a situation that they have caused. And I think they need to pay for this, so they should actually waive their debt on those bonds and that debt that they own.
What's the sense of your colleagues? Is there building support for that, given the price
there
tag that we see amassing?
Yes, there is building support for making China pay.
Well, I think they at a minimum, they need to pay something, because this has cost, as you said, not just the United States, but cost the world a lot. And we could have minimized the effect had we had those extra 3 to 4 weeks in preparation, had we known that this was being communicated, transferred from person to person, as they covered up and denied for a number of weeks.
Well, and 51 days they covered it up. And then once it was found out, the CDC and the World Health Organization wanted to go in. What did they say to the CDC? We don't need your help. We've got this under control. Then the CDC asked for a viral sample so they can do some testing on it. And what does China do? They slow walk the viral sample for the CDC to do their testing. We would gladly have helped. Secretary Pompeo has talked about this. We were ready to help.
Yeah.
And they didn't want it and refused the help. So they made bad decisions, and they should pay for those bad decisions.
Well, and we will certainly encourage our listeners to contact their members of Congress and their senators to encourage them to stand with you in this effort. Senator Marsha Blackburn, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us.
Good to be with you. Stay safe.
All right. Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. And I would encourage you to, you know, as you do communicate with your elected officials, your member of Congress and your two senators, as more evidence, you know, surfaces, and it already is, but more will come forth. The fact that China, you know, concealed how contagious this virus was. You remember originally, we've talked about this many times in the program, it was from animal to human. There was no human-to-human transmission of the disease. Well, they knew early on that that was not the case, that it was, in fact, being transmitted from human to human. But they did not let the rest of the world know that. And the WHO helped conceal that. And it is going to cost a whole lot. All right, coming up next, Resurrection Weekend. What are churches doing? Some continue to think outside the box. The four walls of the church. Pastor Ed Dowell of Trinity Church in Texas joins us next. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com. That's StandCourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. On Twitter, it's at T Perkins. Lots of resources, by the way, for you at TonyPerkins.com. As we've been talking about for the last few weeks, many, many churches, in fact, most of the country, under orders not to meet, no assemblies over 10 people. Obviously, that's affected almost every church in America. Some churches, you know, are, as we've talked about it, are just kind of thinking about what they can't do. But many churches are thinking about what they can do, thinking outside the walls, thinking outside what I call the box, the four walls of the church, and acting. And really amazing. In fact, I had conversations today with a number of pastors whose ministries are growing. Yeah, they're growing. You see, when you're serving and meeting needs, good things happen. And ran across this church in Temple, Texas, Trinity Church, where they decided they wanted to minister. And they knew they couldn't meet, but they were going to do it somehow, some way. Joining me now to talk about it is Pastor Ed Dow. He's the senior pastor of Trinity Church in Temple, Texas. Pastor Dow, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's a blessing to be with you.
Well, thank you, and thank you for taking time out to join us. Let's talk a little bit about, you had, I think it was a member of your church, had an idea. You guys jumped on it and began to minister to the, not just your church, but the community. Share with our listeners kind of what took place.
Well, it was pretty much birthed out of a need, wanting to make sure that we could still minister to the community, but with the church doors being shut, how are we going to do that? And just got to thinking with one of our folks here who wanted to do a prayer ministry. Let's do a drive-through prayer ministry. So we thought, well, how can we make this work? And I remembered I had a little 10x10 canopy at the house, and we brought it up here to the church and secured it to the church parking lot and got some little hand signs made up, set them out on the road front, and had a drive-through prayer ministry started within about an hour.
People eager to have people pray with. I mean, these weren't people in your church. These are just people in the community that saw the signs, right?
Oh, yes, yes. There's a good number of cars that come by our building here daily, probably 30 or 35,000 cars a day. And the needs are extreme, from one extreme to the other. People are coming in requesting prayer for just peace in this time because so many people are troubled, wanting protection over themselves, their families. We've prayed for marriages, children, finances. We prayed for President Trump, that he would have wisdom on how to handle these situations.
So what you're saying is that this has been an opportunity for the church to minister in ways that you may not have done before.
Yes. And something else is we have not really been promoting any social media or very little social media within our church, but this has forced us to go into the social media realm. And I have been absolutely amazed at the number of people that we have contacted with through those realms. The prayer here on the street, the social media avenues has really been a blessing to us, and people are being ministered to.
To me, that's exciting. And I was talking about this yesterday with a pastor, how you go back to the beginning of the church, and everybody was comfortable there in Jerusalem, but they were driven out by opposition, by persecution, by famine, by difficulty, and took the gospel out to places that would not have gotten it otherwise. And this is an opportunity for us to move outside the four walls of the church. Not that there's anything wrong with meeting in a church, but this is creating... I mean, as churches will embrace the challenge, they'll think creatively, think outside the box, act outside the box. And as you just described, and I think you could tell us more about how hungry people are for a sense of hope, help, and peace.
Yes, we're seeing that. We've had local police officers stop in for prayer. State troopers have stopped in for prayer. Nurses. We just had opportunity after opportunity to minister to the needs of people, people that probably would not have come into the church normally, but because they are in need and there is a readily available place they can pull into, they're doing it. We've had a few people who have said, I've driven by multiple times and I finally got the nerve to come in. And, you know, the Lord has met them. And he's ministered to them. And we've seen people just blessed, just touched. We've seen healings. We've seen all kinds of good things happen simply because people were hungry and there was somebody there to meet the need and offer them Jesus.
So, Pastor Dow, explain a little bit just the mechanics of how it works when you set up the tent and what takes place then.
Well, we have the tent set up, and then we have a few signs on the road front. Some of them are kind of like a little wire-formed sign with a paper in the middle, almost like a real estate sign. And we've got different people that are manning it. I have not been out there but just a few days in the last 3 weeks. But there's been somebody here every day for the last 21 days. And they'll be out waving at folks on the street. They'll be lifting up signs. One of my favorite is prayer is essential. And... thankfully, we're in Texas. We have a governor that has actually mandated that churches are essential, which I'm so thankful
right.
for that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still have to work within the confines and limitations
right.
of no more than 10 and then the social distancing thing.
So the people pull up to the tent and they stay in their cars. You just pray for them there in their cars, right?
That's pretty much it. They'll pull up. We'll ask them if they want us to wear a mask or gloves. Some of them say yes, some of them say no. We've got hand sanitizer, gloves and masks available. So we just try to do the best to meet the needs of the people for the level that they want us to minister to them in.
Well, I think, again, challenging times, but exciting times when we embrace the opportunities before us. Pastor Ed Dow, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Tony.
All right. Keep up the good work. Senior pastor at Trinity Church in Temple, Texas. Just another example of, and there are many, 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 many examples like that. And if you have a story to tell, send it to me. Stories@frc.org. Stories@frc.org. And maybe we'll share your story here on Washington Watch. All right. Coming up next, the Predators are out. with more people at home, including children, the porn pushers are preying upon those idle minds. We'll talk about it with David Brody next here on Washington Watch.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities." And many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. So good to have you with us. By the way, let me just remind you once again, those folks that are in my my hometown, speaking of thinking outside the box, we're going to be having a community sunrise service, 7 a.m. at the Central Football Stadium parking lot. There's more details to come. You can go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. I'll be hosting that along with some area pastors. All right, as we see more and more people in stay-at-home order states, what's interesting is the porn industry doesn't want to miss an opportunity. And so they're literally preying upon these people, offering, in some cases, free content, Pornhub being one of them. And this is, it's creating a lot of problems. And it's an industry that preys upon people. While they may be offering the service at no charge, it comes with a high price. Joining me now to talk about this is CBN's chief political analyst and host of the podcast Honest Truth, David Brody. David, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, great to be with you.
All right. First, before we jump into the topic, quickly tell our folks about your podcast.
Sure, Tony. It's called The Pod's Honest Truth. It's about faith and politics. We've had big newsmakers on, everyone from Steve Bannon, Sean Spicer, Roger Stone. The vice president was on with us as well, and we go down the list, Ben Carson.
What about me?
Well, Tony, I know I buried the lead there, but I was saving the best for last.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then in today's episode, we have the venerable Tony Perkins on the show.
Okay. I knew you'd get to it eventually. Hey, in one of your recent podcasts, you talked about this issue of what's happening is people are at home, in particular kids, that the porn industry's preying upon them.
Well, that's exactly right. And we had Donna Rice Hughes on, who is the CEO of Enough is Enough, about child exploitation and what's going on there. And what she was telling me is that basically this is a pandemic inside a pandemic is what's going on. In other words, there's this pandemic of child sexual exploitation on the internet that is getting even worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. And she was telling me that where kids play, predators prey was her quote. And she said, this is really a good time to reset with the kids about what they're doing online. And you mentioned Pornhub. I mean, look, you're right, Tony. They're offering free content. They started this in Italy and Spain, and the numbers went through the roof. Italy had a massive 57% increase in traffic boom, Pornhub did, in Italy just alone. Spain saw 61%. So, and even in the United States, as you might imagine, this is not germane just to one country. It's for all countries. And the United States is having its problems, obviously, as well. So this is a major, major issue, Tony.
Well, David, some would say, oh, what's the harm? You know, porn doesn't hurt anybody. It's an innocent activity. It's just me, and I'm watching what's on my computer.
Right. Well, of course, then there's the something called the societal issue here, right? I mean, there's this idea of, at writ large, that we have a society, and what are we telling our kids? What are we teaching our kids? And quite frankly, this is something that Donna Rice Hughes has devoted her entire life to, at least in the last 20 to 25 years or so. And so she really, you know, her biggest concern, Tony, is that they get you early. You know, this is one of those situations where, I mean, if you look at the statistics, it's intense. I mean, kids as young as 10 years old make up about 25% of the porn users of the under 18 category. And by the way, they're not looking at the soft stuff. I mean, they're looking at sexual assault stuff, violent content, and it gets even worse from there. So she believes that we are in a spiritual war here, and she's looking for the Attorney General of the United States, who she has high praise for, Bill Barr, but to do even more when it comes to enforcing the obscenity laws that, as you know, Tony, are on the books here in the United States.
Yeah, and really haven't been touched since the internet caused porn to explode across the country. In fact, I joined the letter that she sent to Attorney General Barr. This issue of the porn, and you point out that 10-year-olds get onto the porn, and in order to satisfy this craving, curiosity, whatever you want to call it, they have to intensify the experience. And so, I mean, you just play that out over two decades, and you know where this leads. It leads to horrific stuff.
Well, that's exactly right, and there becomes an insensitivity to it. It just becomes a numbness, if you will, and that's exactly right. And then what do we see today? We see statistics where over 50% of people, as you said in one of your questions to me, what's the big deal? They're not necessarily disturbed by it, and that's where we go. As a culture, it reminds me of the Robert Bork book, right? A decade ago, sliding toward Gomorrah. I mean, this idea that we are beyond a slippery slope. We're on that slope, and we're sliding quickly. And this is the type of stuff that we're talking about.
All right, David Brody, as always, great to talk with you. And again, the podcast that David has, The Pod's Honest Truth. A little pun there, I think. David,
thanks
so much.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, check it out. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you can follow the links over. This is a very significant and serious issue. It's a policy issue. It's a parental issue. It's a cultural issue. And folks, parents especially, you need to be paying attention to this, because it's just not like it used to be, where you might stumble across a Playboy magazine. This is... it's outrageous stuff. It is hardcore porn that is not waiting to be found. It is searching out children. It's enticing them into what now I think 18 states have declared a public health crisis. All right, Travis Weber is going to join me on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about it. Also, still coming up, Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute joins me to talk about how some California officials are crossing the line, trampling upon religious liberty. All of that coming up next on Washington Watch. Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, still to come, don't go anywhere, especially for those of you in California, because I want to talk about what's happening out there with some officials crossing the line. You know, I've been very supportive of churches adhering to the restrictions of, you know, not having these mass meetings, because it does aid in the spread of the of virus sickness. And so, look, it's reasonable. It's reasonable. But in California, they're going overboard, targeting churches, not allowing churches to have drive-in services, even though people are in their car, not allowing them to drive through and get prayer, or to get, you know, some churches want to give out Easter eggs or something. They won't even let the churches do anything. In fact, some places restricting them from moving about. That is crossing the line, especially when they're not doing the same to drive through restaurants and other places. So we're going to talk about that with Brad Dacus. These are the kind of things you got to watch for. And when they happen, jump on it, because we cannot tolerate that type of infringement upon religious liberty. We've talked about that before. While some things are reasonable and acceptable when they're uniformly applied, what we're seeing out of California is not. So we're going to talk about that. But first, I want to continue my conversation on the issue of porn. As people are at home, kids out of school, they're on the computers, and this has long been a problem, but the porn industry stepping up their efforts, stepping it up, trying to entice more people into what is an addictive and destructive habit. Joining me to continue this conversation, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back on.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. David Brody touched on this just a bit, but as you and I were talking about earlier, Pornhub, trying to entice people to this, offered their content to those people first in Italy, their content free of charge, now moving to the United States. We've seen a spike in that viewership and the activity.
Tony, we have. Pornhub themselves has noted that they've seen a 18% jump over normal numbers after making their content, premium content, free for 30 days. Content's not even the right word, Tony, as we've talked about here. This is dangerous stuff. It's harmful to human beings as individuals, harmful to society. And this harmful stuff is now seeing an 18% jump on this site over normal numbers in connection to in connection with the recent dynamic and coronavirus, everyone's sitting around, and these pornography sites trying to lure people and trap them into viewing this stuff while they're sitting around.
Now, I mentioned this in the last segment with David Brody, but I think the number is 18. It might be one higher, one less. I can't remember exactly. A number of states that have declared a public health crisis as it pertains to pornography. And people say, well, wait, what's that about? I mean, there are consequences to the consumption of pornography to the point that it is a health issue. It's certainly a safety issue. It aids in the exploitation of people, women, children. So this has some significant consequences and something we need to be aware of.
It does, Tony. There are an increasing number of states declaring pornography to be a public health hazard through legislative resolutions in most cases. And we've been involved in these. My colleague Petrina Mosley testified last year on one, and this is something we've tracked. These I think the number is 17 recently, but we can check. This is really been something that more and more states have latched onto as the issue has developed. And, if anything, the coronavirus has shown more of a need to address this. But the recognition of and need to address the problems from this have arisen before this. For instance, if you look at the Tennessee Senate's resolution, quote, it's a public health hazard leading to a broad spectrum of individual and public health impacts and social harm, unquote. And the follow-on effects of pornography have been widely discussed, cited in these resolutions. They're discussed in our resources, which we cover this issue at frc.org/pornography with a subpage on our site with all the resources that folks can go and view there. And obviously there are others like Josh McDowell and his ministry who focused a lot on this too.
Yeah, you mentioned Josh McDowell. He did some extensive research into this. So when you bring that up, I want to underscore this because people say, oh, yeah, pornography is a problem for some other people. But what Josh McDowell found was that it was a significant problem inside the church of both men and women who were sitting in the pews of our churches.
Right. And the I'm just looking at some of his resources right now, and he kind of goes through myths of and the lies behind pornography. This is a problem in the church. Christians struggle with this because they believe the lies behind it, that it doesn't affect people, it's no big deal, and so forth. It's significant and important for Christians and the church to make sure they're addressing this, and then being able to reflect truth and reflect the what's good for people onto a broader society for the well-being of society. The interesting thing is a lot of the pushback against the harms of porn is coming from the society at large, from non-Christian communities. So I think the reality that this is harmful for people and the follow-on effects are settling in for many, and it's good to see. Certainly the church needs to address it at the same time.
Well, it's an issue spiritually. It's an issue emotionally. It affects relationships. I mean, Paul talks about this in 1 Corinthians. He said, flee fornication. This is the King James Version. Every sin that a man doeth is without the body, but he that commits fornication sins against his own body. And so there's there is a spiritual, a physical component here of this. And it is a lie that has been sold that, oh, you can do this, it's not going to hurt anything. It damages your spiritual relationship. You cannot be immersed in porn and be filled with the Spirit and be walking with God and be what He wants you to be. And we've seen this over and over in our men's conferences, our Stand Courageous conferences, where men have this addiction and it's destroying relationships with their spouses. It's destroying relationship with their children. And there's help. There's help. There's a way out. And first off here, the reason we're talking about this, number one, you need to be guarding what you're doing right now in this time where so many people are at home, guarding what your children are seeing. But if you have a problem with this, you need to seek help.
Tony, fully agree. You know, this on several levels, there's several things I think we can kind of point out in regard to this, the impact on men and pastors. A significant number of men obviously struggle with this in the church. Pastors themselves struggle with this, and I think there's been some studies that have focused on this. Looking at one right now from last year with the Barna Group and Covenant Eyes, looking at the impact, significant numbers with regard to the impact on men. But women struggle with this too. And my colleague Petrina, who I mentioned, she has a piece on impacts on women and pornography. That's on our site, frc.org/pornography. Other advocates who are trying to join us in this fight and tackle the issue, Donna Rice Hughes of Enough is Enough, and many other folks out there working to combat the harm that this is causing to broader society and shed a light on how it's harming the church.
Yeah, and folks, I would encourage you to take a look at those resources at tonyperkins.com. Follow links over. Travis, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right, folks, check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Make use of those resources. All right, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I've been fully supportive of those jurisdictions that have reasonably restricted public gatherings for the purpose of guarding the health of the public. I mean, it's a no-brainer. And that includes churches. But they have to be treated the same as everybody else. Well, it now appears, and we've seen a couple of examples, but they've been very limited. But it now appears that in California, there are some officials taking advantage of this opportunity to treat churches in a way that they are not treating other businesses. In fact, to me, this looks like a pure infringement upon religious liberty. Joining me now to talk about this is the president of the Pacific Justice Institute, Brad Dacus. Brad, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's my pleasure.
All right. Explain to our listeners the letter that came out last night with instructions to churches on what they could not do.
Yeah, this was very alarming. This letter that came out through San Bernardino, they pronounced that churches could not hand out Easter egg baskets to people who are just driving up from the church to be able to receive that information, that they were prohibited from being able to do that. And, people can drive up to get a Big Mac at McDonald's, to drive through to pick up food, but they can't drive up to get an Easter egg basket for their kids. And this is really serious because it also could play into the ability for people to drive up to get communion, for example, or drive up to confession. We've seen churches do that as well. We also see some limitations, Tony, put on churches and some apparently threatening churches who want to simply have the pastor preach behind the pulpit and have that sermon recorded and then put out on the Internet. Now, under the California mandate, they are protected to be able to do that. So this is just a classic example of where local governments, we believe at Pacific Justice Institute, have overstepped their boundary, and it's very alarming, and we at Pacific Justice are there to investigating as we speak to help those being impacted by these outrageous ultimatums.
So in addition to not allowing them to drive up to receive, you know, candy, Easter eggs, but if a church wanted to do that as an outreach, they can't do that, but they can also prohibiting them from having what's called the parades where cars would just drive by the church and or a drive-in service where people would come, stay in their car, listen on an FM transmitter or an FM station to a service. They can't even do that. Now, I mean, people are allowed to move around in their cars. They're allowed to go to the grocery store. They're allowed to go other places, but they can't go to the church parking lot and sit in their car and listen to a Sunday message?
Yeah, that's what's being delivered, and I think that that's something that's going to be very problematic for those local governments that are doing it. It's not a state mandate. This is something that some zealots, zealot bureaucrats, and local governments have pronounced. And we at Pacific Justice would not hesitate to defend any church that or individual that was being attacked for doing that. This is a new area that we're in. This is a circumstance that we have not been in really before as a nation. So we can't guarantee that a judge is going to rule one way or the other because of the emotion and the intensity and the fear and the impact of potential death, yada, yada. That said, looking at it objectively and comparatively, it makes no sense. And that's why, at the very least, from a public policy perspective and public pressure perspective, I think this is something that people need to be on the phone talking to their local legislators or their local, in this case, local city councilmen and county supervisors there in San Bernardino.
And this comes with a $1,000 fine, and of course it's a misdemeanor, and it could include 90 days in jail, although that's not going to happen.
Right.
I will just say, Brad, if I were a pastor in California, that, and I was planning, just like I'm planning here in Central, working with other pastors in my hometown to do a drive-in service. People will stay in their cars. We are adhering to the social distancing. We're doing all of that. I would do it. If I were a pastor in California, I would still do it because I would be in compliance with the reasonable restrictions. And then I would call upon Pacific Justice Institute to defend me in court.
Yes.
Because I don't think they have a leg to stand on, quite frankly.
You're absolutely right. And in fact, I also want to make sure churches are aware that not only on the defense and that we need to be aware of these factors. And on our website, we have great resources along with you guys at FRC, some great resources explaining. Well, we have memorandums for 20 different states on the impact of the law and the rights of churches dealing with these mandates. But on the proactive side, churches, I think, need to be taking advantage of the opportunity for financial relief through the CARE Act. And tomorrow, on Thursday, we're going to be having a seminar on the phone at 2 p.m. For churches and 2 p.m. Pacific time. And they can register on our website, pacificjustice.org, on how they can take advantage of those opportunities. We also have it at 10 a.m. Pacific time for business owners and at noon for private schools. So there are some very positive, proactive things.
Right.
That I should not be lost amidst the some of these injustices that we're dealing with as well.
It's just a few outliers. For the most part, the federal government's been great about this, and that's the program, the SBA loan program, the Paycheck Protection Program. So, folks, if you live in California particularly, I would encourage you to go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over to Brad's site, and maybe you can participate in those calls tomorrow. Brad, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate all the great work that Pacific Justice Institute does on behalf of religious freedom.
Thank you, Tony, for your great work. We really appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. Brad Dacus. To find out more, especially if you're in California, I encourage you to participate in his calls tomorrow. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay. You know what that music means? It means we're out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And once again, until we meet again, the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.